Blog Talk Radio.
Cool Rocky music. Yo, yo, this is your boy. This is the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And we have a no-guest policy tonight. No guests.
No guests. We don't need guests.
All to ourselves. We could have had a guest on tonight, but I got too much to do, so I don't want to talk to anybody.
You want to talk to me, though, right?
Get the news out there. I got to do a program book overnight for this Battle of the Badges thing. I got to perfect my tribute to my friend, Tony Palermo.
That's very important.
Tony Palermo, Jr. And I also have to get the bout card all set up and squared away. And I might even have to do a little shadow boxing tonight, Tony, because...
Uh-oh.
Latest
so, thing so, is... Rich, come on. I'm going to the news first right here. Tell us the news. Are you or are you not coming out of retirement this weekend?
It's possible. I mean, I've literally been told to stay ready. I'm on standby. Now, there's a couple young guys from Mickey Ward's gym, and there's a couple other heavyweights in the mix that are most likely going to take my place at this point, and I'm not going to have to come out of retirement. But and that's a big but. I mean, Bobby McGuire and I have been emailing back and forth today. He knows. He said it's pretty big of me to step up, and he told me a little bit about his guy. His guy is 1-1. He won his first Battle of the Badges deal. Not Battle of the Badges, but his first amateur competition with the FDNY boxers. And then when he Bobby talked about the FDNY versus New York Cops Battle of the Badges thing that they did, and this guy fought in that and lost against a guy who was a black belt in karate. So he's not a bad guy. He's not brand new to it. So he has a little bit of experience, and he seems like he's had mixed results. But obviously, if he's coming off a loss, he's going to want to prove something, and he's coming up to Boston, so. He didn't want to get maxed up with a guy who was, I think, like 280 and 4-2. He's 1-1, so they had to do a little switch around, and now it looks like he's going to have to get one of these guys in the mix or myself. And I sent Bobby an email with my training regimen there on the unique bag that I use. And he told me a little bit about his guy. His guy can move, he said. And it's 2-minute rounds. If I have to go, I have to go. I think it'd be great. I think it'd whip the crowd into a frenzy to have the co-announcer end up coming from backstage all dressed up to fight.
That would definitely be interesting. Let's just say that. I don't know how much you've been training. I know you were doing some sparring for a while, so you had the rib injury. But I'll tell you the one thing, about boxing, that's definitely a sport. You got to be ready for it. And when you go in there, it's like, even though as much as you've been running, the couple tips I'm going to give you. And, I'm talking to a football American here, but you got to relax when you're in there and don't forget to breathe. I knew I had a kid that I was a teammate with at Lock Haven. Hell of an athlete. When he was in high school, he was all-state football, all-state baseball, all-state wrestling, just a tremendous athlete. But the problem was when he would get in the boxing ring, he would hold his breath.
Right.
And then by the end of the first round, he'd be gasping because basically he wasn't getting any air in his oxygen for the 2-minute rounds. So even when I used to
tell him, when I train, right, when I hit the bag and I'm looking at the timer, I'm always waiting for 40 seconds in. You know why? Because I noticed when I hit the bag, any bag, no matter what it is, heavy bag or, my unique thing that I got, my space bag, I call it. Anyway, when I hit it, I notice once you hit that 40-second mark, that's when most people seem to get tired. Well, that's when at least I get tired for the first sense of real tiredness, like, oh, the gasp. No matter how good a shape I'm in, that's when I first sense, like, I'm starting to go into being tired here in this round. So you got to feel that, and that's when you got to pick up your intensity when you're training. You feel like you're getting tired, so that's one of the things that I do specifically to get myself ready. And these are 2-minute rounds, so it's going to be even easier for me. Not that any fight is easy, but I just went sparring with a kid who was 20 something years old and went on to become Golden Gloves champion. So if I can do that, I can go against a guy who's my age and might have been training.
The suggestions I got for you, man. Control the tempo. Hold on one second. No, you're not going with that. Control the tempo. Just breathe. You've got to breathe. I mean, like I said, this kid George that I knew, he would hold his breath in there. Control the tempo, breathe, relax. I mean, it sounds easy, but it's just certain things to concentrate on. And if,
The guy's 6'3", too. He's 6'3", 220. And I'm about 210 right now. I have been slacking off on the working out for the last few weeks, so I got a little round in the edges, around the edges in the meantime, but I still have the old pep in me. I hit the bag like a bad man. yesterday, no, the day before yesterday, and I did the 4 miles yesterday, and I thought I was going to die for a second at the end of it, but I lived. I don't feel bad at all today. A little bit of a shin splint going, but, you know.
Oh, they suck.
Doesn't prevent me from moving around as fast as I used to. And I feel good about it, you know. It's like, it'll be the first time I've ever fought heavyweight, except for the one time at Norwich that was not on my college record officially, where I fought the guy that was 30 pounds heavier, and I gave him 30 seconds at the end of the fight to knock me out, and he tried.
No.
But, I had to hit it back. I had to break my rule. But anyway, so this would be the first time in a long time. If it happens, if I was a betting man, I'd say it's not going to happen. It seems like they're doing everything they could possibly do to make it not happen. But at the same time, they're not telling me not to be ready.
Right.
So it's going to be like last second. I'm afraid they're just going to be like, not afraid, but I'm thinking it's going to be like, you know, it's almost like Anthony Palermo, my buddy, like the captain that I'm going to be saluting here. Behind this, because as soon as I heard this, that's what I thought. I mean, you know, here's the guy I'm honoring with a tribute, and was on my boxing team, and he knows I can box. I mean, he was at all the events that we had on campus and stuff. So I mean, this would just be like right up his alley. He would love to see something like that happen. Me get thrown in and have to fight. You know, so it almost feels like he's behind it. But anyway, you know, if it happens, it happens. And even if I get my butt kicked, just getting up there in front of everybody and showing that I can box will be fun, I think. Yeah, so,
you know,
put it out all on. You
know, like Rocky said, it ain't over till it's over.
Right. I get a jab. I mean, that's all I worry about. You know, if a guy can get around my jab, that's when I start to get scared. And not too many people have been able to get around my jab over the years. You know, it was funny. I had this guy over my house. There's a friend of mine, and he's about 6'3", same as this guy, and right around the same weight. He's like maybe 218. This guy's 220. And so I had him, you know, stand up there, and I said, "Just put your arm out, you know." And just so jab him. You know, and he goes, "Don't hit me." You know, but I'm thinking just like based on his height and my style, I want to do like Rocky. Stay low.
Right.
Reach and just try to kind of jab him more to the body. And if I do get him to the head, you know, I want to kind of knock down to the right and then up. So I'm going to work on that a little bit when I hit the bag for the last time tomorrow. I'll take the Saturday to just kind of do the event. Get ready.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the shorter guy, now, I was joking around one of my old trainers a couple weeks ago when I was at the fights. And we were watching the one fight, and he knew the kid that was fighting. He had trained him when the kid was first starting out. And he's like, and he's sitting there, the kid ended up eventually winning, but he did a few things that, you know, made mistakes. And the one mistake he was making, he was the shorter guy, but he was fighting what they call tall. He was, standing up and like trying to outbox the guy. He goes, "No, if you're the shorter guy, you got to fight short. You got to crouch down." And I turned to Rev and he goes, "Yeah, if you're the shorter guy, you got to, you know, you can't fight his fight." And I said, "If you're the taller guy, you got to do this." And I said, "Well, I've never had that experience being the taller guy."
Yeah, me either. Well, maybe once. I don't know about size is care there when I fought him, the guy from UNLV or wherever, Nevada, somewhere.
Oh, well, Brian Kerr?
Brian Kerr, yeah.
Well, Brian Kerr was about 2 inches taller than me. I was around 5'8", he was around 5'9", 5'10". He had a little bit of height on me.
So I was 5'10", so I was about right, same size.
If he was greater than 10 times, yeah. He would have had me by about 1.5 inches, 2 inches.
But
see, that's the guy I kind of like to fight.
3. If I duck down and I get the right half a second head start, you know, I know I can get around to, you know, his best reach. But the thing is, you know, the last match that I had, the reason why I did so bad in sparring is because I didn't listen to my trainer about the other thing you have to do with a guy who's got better reach. You get to crowd him and hit him with his body. You know, so that's the other thing that's chief in my mind is if I do get in this fight with this guy, and, you know, he's going to be a 6'3". He's probably going to have pretty similar reach to the same other guy who's got 6'3". He's not much different with people. I mean,
this guy, which I assume is, you might not even know. Do you know if he is a right-handed or if he's southpaw?
I'm not sure. I just got a bunch of stuff from Bobby McGuire that leaves out all the information. And so this would be a good time to read everything, you know. But if I don't get it all...
Yeah, and the reason I was asking...
Bobby McGuire just sent me this email. He's just listed all his guys. I'm just going to try to go through it quick. There's like 12 fights on the card. Obviously, we had Bobby on the show a few weeks ago. He's a 9/11 survivor, retired after 22 years of service in 2002, and he was an original member of the Bravest Boxing Team that was formed in 1982. He retired from boxing in 1995 with a 44-6 record. He was the first New York City firefighter to win a gold medal in the World Police Fire Games. Then also they got a coach, Mike Reno, who works in Engine Company 33 in New York City, has represented the FDNY in over 50 bouts and won a gold, silver, and bronze medal in the World Police Fire Games. His father was also a member of the FDNY who survived 9/11. His wife, Susan, is a Golden Glove champion and was ranked number 2 in the country. How's that for a power couple?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, no shit.
All right, so now here's the fighters. Richie Hit Like a Brick Dobby. He's 225 pounds from Engine Company 69, and he's 35 years old. Steve Mr. T. Tortoriello, he is 3,265 pounds, O&O, and he's an EMS. He's the first EMS officer to ever represent the FDNY Bravest Boxing Team, and it's his first bout. Then we have Ryan Blanco Diablo Nordman. He's 35. He's 175 pounds, and he's 4-3 from Ladder Company 45. Then we got the guy that I might be fighting, John the Irish Curse Draher, who's 26, 215 pounds now, about 220. He lost some weight, so he's even closer to my weight. I'm about 210. He's 215, 1-1, and he's from Ladder Company 147. And 47 just happens to be my lucky number.
Cool. Yeah, I know. Your one email was boxer 47. Well, the one thing I was going to say, like, and I know you don't know much about the guy except for, you know, his measurables, but the reason I was asking, regarding his stance, southpaw orthodox, the one thing I learned how to do relatively early in my career was stopping a taller guy from jabbing. You know, like me being shorter than everybody, and I didn't have a fast jab, I didn't have a flashy jab. Like, I wasn't a guy like a Floyd Mayweather or, you know, Muhammad Ali that just had that like a good whip of a jab. No, I had like a thudding jab. You know, it wasn't the best out there because I didn't have long reach. But what I would always try to do, the one thing they taught me, was block and counter at the same time. The best way to stop a guy from jabbing is to out-jab him. And people would always say to me, they think, okay, I'm fighting a guy like Michael Jordan. Now, I wasn't able to do it to Slatton. I was not able to out-jab him. Maybe it was because of, you know, the 80 inches in reach differential. But I always would pride myself in, like, you're fighting a guy, just say, hey, I'm going to go back to Michael Jordan. There was another guy I fought by the name of Phil Small, who was about 6'2", 6'3". Jordan was about 6'2". And these guys, long arms, when they would fire that jab, my thing was catching it, using my right hand, like almost like a catcher's mitt, right in front of my face. And when I would see their shoulder twitch as that jab was coming, I would just stick mine out as hard, as fast as I could. That was an old Kenny Norton trick. That's how he beat he beat Muhammad Ali with it, and then he gave him two more tough fights. What he would do is guys would fight Ali, and they would try to neutralize his jab by blocking it and then countering, or slipping it and then countering. And Ali was too fast for it. So what Norton would do, as soon as he saw that twitch in the shoulder, he would jab at the same time. So if he was able to block Ali's jab and then land his own, well, what's Ali going to do? He's going to stop jabbing. Because look at Rich. You're like, Rich, if you throw a jab and yours doesn't land, but you get punched in the mouth, what are you going to do? You're not going to use it anymore. That's how That was my best way of stopping Taylor guys from jabbing. If you go back to my fight on YouTube with Jordan, or even the one I have on there with Phil Small, you'll see me doing that, and you'll see me like, you know, and I'm just, it's not flashy, it's not fast, it's not pretty, it's just good, hard, thumping jab right in the mouth.
Well, anyway.
And double jab.
I don't want to type it up too much. Because, you know, I do appreciate the advice and everything, Tony, but I don't want to make this event about me, because it ain't about me, I'll tell you that. It's, you know, it's all for this big charity, Scientific Social Solutions, the CRASH program. I'm working on their new website, which will be live tonight at, it's going to be CRASHScience.org. So
the one thing you're right about, you're right, it is about, the most important thing is the charity, and it is, you know, doing the right cause. But the other thing about it is, you know, keep, you know, doing yourself good out there, too. I mean, hey, you might not even be fighting. Most likely you won't be, but you got to go out there. You know, we want the host of the show to look good.
All right, yeah, of course. They kind of like suddenly, not really suddenly, but I got brought into the mix early. The very first press conference, they kind of threw me in to be the announcer just for the heck of it. And so I had never done anything like that as far as, you know, being right up in public and doing it right on the mic, you know, except for doing a couple speeches here and there for junior ROTC and stuff and in high school. So that was the first time I actually, other than this radio show, I got up in public and spoke like that. So, and it was just a very small crowd. So it kind of got me thinking, you know, like, when we had this last meeting, they just kind of threw me up there and said, all right, you know, that's it. You're going to be the co-announcer. So it was like I got a promotion. So I'm ready for it. You know, this is going to be big, and I know there's going to be a lot of important people there. And I haven't really tried to capitalize too much on, you know, the whole Fighting These Unlimited part of it. You know, I'm going to put an ad in the program for us and all that. But
put my picture in there.
Yeah, you can put your picture in there, sure.
Put our picture in there.
Yeah. I mean, we had so many of the different fighters on the show, so definitely would love to point people there.
Put our picture in there from our Fenway last year.
Yeah.
Do I have to think of everything?
That's a good idea, Tony. I'm going to write that down. But anyway, the whole program, I'm going to get back to reading these names in a minute here. We've got like six other guys left, but we also got the other side to talk about. Might as well make this whole show, almost half the show, about this event, because it's coming up and it's the last chance to talk about it. But anyway, trying to get to the point here, this is about, you know, the whole civil service sector of society, basically, to use alliteration. We have firemen, we have EMS here, we have corrections officer, we have police, well, corrections officers, we have police officers, regular people, truck driver from New York Athletic Club. Paul the Gentleman Corvette is fighting, 40 years old, 195 pounds, 3-0. And he's representing the FDNY team. The rest of the guys are EMS or fire guys, but I just thought that was kind of interesting. And we have these guys from Mickey Ward's gym, just regular fighters. But it's going to be an emphasis on the civil service people. And it's going to be the main benefactor. Obviously, we talked about it a lot, the CRASH program, scientificsocialsolutions.org is the website now. We're going to move the CRASH program part of it to teamcrashscience.org. And we're going to talk a lot more about that at the event, but it's also we're going to have a big part of the thing. After the second fight of the night, we're going to have this big tribute to the 343 firefighters who were lost on September 11th, and the amazing stories of the three firemen who were lost from the FDNY boxing team, and as we heard from Bobby McGuire, his nephew, who was lost that day, and he stayed on the rubble, sifting through the rubble until he found his body. So, I mean, just an incredible, incredible story there, and every single one of those guys that was on the boxing team has a story sort of like that, so... I'm just going to have this whole crowd move to tears when I get up there and I go through this. And, you know, I just do this. It's going to be like 7 to 10 minutes worth of tribute. We're going to unveil the plaque, the plaque company for the Palermo, Anthony Palermo, U.S. Army Captain He was killed April 6, 2007 in Baghdad, Iraq by IED. Everybody in his Humvee got killed. And he had his son born like 3 weeks later. So he'll be three right around the time that this event is kicking off. I'm not sure exactly when his birthday is, but I mean, it's like right now, pretty much. So it's just perfect timing for that to give somebody that deserves it to contribute. Norwich has helped out huge. Norwich University, where I met the kid when I was the boxing coach there. And the president of Norwich University, Richard Schneider himself, gave us $100 for the plaque, so I'd like to mention that. We had Ray Murray, classic, good friend to have, Ray Murray. He was on the boxing team. He gave the first donation of $300, so thanks a lot to him. We had another couple donations come in today. We'll definitely have a little plate under the plaque recognizing everybody who gave something. And one thing I definitely wanted to mention, I just got off the phone with this guy today, Be Positive, the letter B, positiveproject.com. And it's a company that basically they kept clothing and gear and everything, and they give all a portion of their stuff to some kind of charity. So they're looking to help out this whole tribute thing to Anthony and help out some way. We're going to have a link from AnthonyPalermoMemorial.info. to their site by the end of the night, and we're going to have a link from Fight News Unlimited. It's a great company, great guys from the local area here in Massachusetts. And Norwood sent out this big email blast about the event and about Anthony. So we're starting to get these calls from these folks that have everything in a similar vein. And they're working in the same direction, and sort of this same path of giving to charity. So. It's a great company, great website. I'm looking at it right now. They got some real nice gear, and it's gifts to charity, so can't be.
Hey, done. Rich, going back to tragedy we had in New York, September 11th. I don't know if you knew this or not, but one of the firefighters that was lost on that day was Lieutenant Greg Atlas. He was the nephew of Teddy Atlas.
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and And the reason I'm thinking about that was about 10 days after 9/11 happened, one of the first, events that I attended after that was a boxing card. It was on Friday Night Fights down at the Blue Horizon in Philadelphia. I had about three or four friends of mine actually fight on the card. Rogers Matagua fought. Another kid fought by the name of Mambia Bakari, was another friend of mine. Ron Flash Bodie fought. Mike No Joke Stewart fought. So, a pretty good card. And before the show went on the air, before the fight started, the show had just started, and they did a brief tribute to Lieutenant Greg Atlas. Teddy Atlas was there. Then they did a ceremonial ringing of the 10 count, and then a rendition of God Bless America by a gentleman named Bunny Sigler, who's out of Philadelphia. And that night, even though I was at the fight and in attendance live, I had set my VCR to tape it at home, and I have it on YouTube, and I'd like to share that with you, and I don't know if that was something you might want to post somewhere on the site, or even if you're doing like a Battle of the Badges. I mean, I think it's a really, really nice tribute, and it was, it was only 10 days after it happened, and it was really fresh in everybody's mind.
Yeah, definitely. Anything that goes along the same vein, we like to put it all together. Nice package to honor.
Yeah, I just sent it to you, Rich.
All right.
You watch it. I mean, I think you'll, it's definitely a emotional video. I mean, you can really see in everybody's faces there, because you're at this fight card and you're trying to have a good time, but it's like, you don't know like what you're rooting for your friends. Like I had four friends of mine in the car that night. And you're rooting for your friends and you're trying to have a good time and you're talking to people, but you can just tell it was such an eerie feeling. And then like that night, every fighter that came out, American flag somehow. Mike Stewart came out in the Rocky trunks. We had fighters, like I think the main event was between like a Mexican and like a Dominican fighter. They both came out with the American flags, waving them up and down, and it was like it was it's hard to describe. I mean, it was almost 9 years ago, but I'll never forget it. And Bunny Sigler, when you hear this rendition of God Bless America, it'll send chills down your spine.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually thinking of using the Proud to Be an American, if we could get that with the DJ. I don't know what the sound system's going to be like or anything, so...
Proud to Be an American, is that God Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good song.
Yeah, I'll never forget that song because when we were at the Air Force Academy, the first holiday we really got to celebrate was July 4th. You know, we got thrown down there like June 30th.
Right.
Wolves right away. I think it was like June 1st we were down there. It was pretty early, like right after graduation. I pretty much remember leaving for there. And we get down there, and it's like hot and heavy for the first few weeks. And the first holiday you get is July 4th, and it's like the first time they treat you like a human. They give you a little party, and that song playing, and people were throwing us candy from the balcony above. I mean, it was like, it was unbelievable. It was like, and we got to see the fireworks show. And that was like our first relaxation time the whole time I was down there. So, and that was the first time I'd ever heard that song, was when they played it during the fireworks display. And, you know, of course, you know, being anyone in the military or associated with 9/11, that song's become huge with that.
Right. Honestly, I think anybody that is a true American.
Right.
You know, I have what I did was I always make my own CDs now, and the one song I made was some like slower songs that I kind of like, and like some kind of songs that really make me. And it's funny because some of them are not, supposed to be like that. They're just songs that make me feel like I'm proud to be, a member of the United States of America. So obviously you have songs like God Bless the USA, Born in the USA, America the Beautiful by Ray Charles. Excellent rendition. But then there's other songs, it's funny, like the Chris Daughtry song, Home. That always made me feel like, being American because, this is my home and this is, just proud to be from this country. Other songs, God Bless America, just a lot of just great, great, great songs. I know a lot of times when I go to Phillies game around July 4th and they do like their fireworks and that's they're playing like all great songs like that. And you really feel into it and you really feel like, you know what, this is the greatest country in the world, and I'm glad that, you and, the FDNY and, the Massachusetts, police organization, they're putting this great show together as a charity just to make sure that, we haven't forget what happened 9 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was a no-brainer to me to associate Tony with it as well because he went over there to Iraq.
Oh, absolutely.
To die, for his country. Not that we went over there intending to die, but, I mean, he died for his country because of 9/11, so...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you're 100% right, and that is, a great thing you're doing. I really admire that this whole event coming together, and it is a perfect way for, you to pay tribute to a friend of yours that, you lost. I know my college roommate, he lost his brother, similar situation. His brother was a Marine. Was killed by an IED roadside. I guess that was back in 2004, I think it was. And, and I think it was Carlson Lake.
I'm
going
to tell this story. I mean, I sent you the video. I don't know if you got it, but, considering the IED situation and, how they...
Oh, yeah. the one where the kid was, like, tracking it.
Probably a lot of people have gotten this, like a little video of a guy doing the Allah Akbar.
Yeah, Allah Akbar, and then he gets shoots up the third mortar, and then he's gone. That was great, dude.
Which is like a weapon that's been used since, at least since Vietnam, before then probably. You just drop the little shell into the tube, it fires off, one round, two round, three rounds, and these guys are sitting there videotaping this guy doing it behind a wall. And then after the fourth shell goes into the mortar, but before the guy pulls the trigger, the U.S. has this technology that can sense where that mortar exactly is coming from and shoot it around back automatically by computerized thing. You know, they must have been shooting at a base that had this technology. It's like, you know, a small version of the missile defense system, I guess.
Yeah, right, right.
It goes back to the actual point where they're firing it from. So as soon as the fourth one goes down the barrel, this thing has already tracked the location and right on video, right as they're saying it, Allah Akbar, boom!
Yeah, it's a great video. I sent it to my dad. He's away this week. So I gotta tell him when he comes home. I'm like, Dad, you gotta watch this video.
Oh,
Dad, I know he'll love it. I know my father.
And you know, part of the reason why it's like, you know, so apropos, I got this tribute to Anthony going on, and his younger stepbrother is 18. He's enlisting in the Army, and it's like, you know, I hope to God the guy gets over there and if true justice were served, he'd be able to find that motherfucker did that to Anthony and take care of him, you know? And sometimes life works that way. Sometimes, you know, everything happens for a reason. You know? And everything works out in the end. I mean, you know, nobody wants to see anybody die, but Anthony died. He became a very good example for people to follow. He'll never be forgotten now. And, you know, I want to make sure that people learn from his example and
he died as a hero. You know, he went over there, believed in his country, and he believed in doing the right thing, and he did. And he sacrificed his life. But and what really, really, really irks me with him, and I know this is a boxing and an MMA show, but tonight's more of a tribute show, just like you said. What irks me more than anything is these, you know, bleeding hearts that are running around. No, you shouldn't do this. No, you shouldn't do that. And no, the troops are wrong. And oh, God bless the troops and shit like that. That sickens me. It really does. I mean, he did it the right way, just so these people had the freedom to talk shit.
Yeah. And love it or hate it, you know, the whole war situation, the politics behind it. You know, you see the pictures that the troops actually send you, if you know people who are over there. And you see the families over there that are taking pictures with them, and they look safe. They look happy because we're there. And that's
exactly.
Not reported anymore on the news. You know, maybe it did at the beginning, but people have forgotten about that.
Yeah,
that's a hardcore difference. Ray Murray, the guy who sent us $300 for Anthony, he's got a picture of him dancing around in a circle with these Iraqi kids. I mean, I've never seen anything like that on the news. Never. You know, watch, I shouldn't say never. I mean, you did see a lot of that at the very beginning. You got to give the news credit for that. They did follow it very well at the beginning. But nowadays, it's like, you know, it's old news, and they don't want to talk about it unless somebody dies, and it's unfortunate. But, you know, they are doing good work over there. I know a few people who have been over there, seen a lot of stuff that, you know, they're not going to want to talk about anymore when they get back, you know. And they're going to have to live with it for the rest of their lives. But and that's where they live, you know. It's just it's a rough situation. But they're doing it for a good cause. And I don't agree with the war. I don't want them over there. But that doesn't mean I don't support them 100%.
I mean, you look at it in different ways. Because people say, yeah, I don't, you know, but you got to understand something. It's necessary. What was being done over there is necessary. I mean, you know, Al Qaeda and Taliban, they want to, you saw what they did on 9/11, I mean, and they want to do that on a widespread, more of a widespread scale. What you got to do is you got to take them out. And, I mean, a lot of people say, well, okay, go and wipe them out to Taliban, that's fine. But why did you start the war in Iraq? Iraq didn't do anything. There was no weapons of mass destruction. Well, you had a guy that was a dictator who was very dangerous. If he got his hands on something, yeah, he would use it without even blinking, and he would try to get you before you got him.
I'm not going to get too political on it, but the other part of it is you got oil in that region. They have the largest reserves of oil. You have to be friendly with that country. That territory,
right.
Because oil drives that territory, and if
exactly.
You let the guy that has the most oil continue to abuse his power and keep that whole area fired up and ready to, you know, nuke anybody they see, then there's going to be trouble in the long run. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And another thing was they were allowing the terrorists and the Al-Qaeda network to run their operation in that country. Well, shit, on September 12th, it was said, you know, the exact words almost, you're either with us or you're against us. You either support us or you support the terrorists. And if you support them, God help you. That was pretty much what was said. Because we're coming after them, and if you try to impede us from doing that, or you try to provide them safe havens, well, guess what? We're going to take you out, too. Which is unnecessary in my eye. But, like I said, let's not get too political. Let's talk about, you know, what it's going to be a very positive event this weekend. You know, I wish I could come up there. I do have to work on Saturday.
All right. Actually, that gives me a perfect opportunity for this next remark here I'm going to make.
Go ahead.
To neusportstr.com, Ucaster, let me see if this works. NeSports is going to have this on NeSportsTV.com. That's the website. I'm looking at the player itself's website. That's where I get it confused. But NeSportsTV.com, you can actually order this on pay-per-view on your computer. And I apologize to everybody who wished they knew about this sooner, and I join you in the sentiment, because I do too. I mean, I knew they were going to do this, but I just got the link today and the player to embed. I'm going to have that on the Battle of the Badges info site tonight. Get that up there so that you can order it. But I know that if you go to anysportstv.com, the Battle of the Badges banner is right there on the front page, and there's a link that says order the fights here. You click on that, $10. You can watch it anytime, either during or after the event. If you want to buy it after it happens, you can buy it right there. You know, they've come in and they've volunteered to do that for us. So thanks for NeSportsTV for that. And you get to see everybody. Now we did about half the New York team there. I want to finish just going through those names real quickly before we get on to the boxing and MMA news we have. For the rest of the New York team, we also have at 180 pounds, Brian the Mean Machine McNicholas. He's 33 years old, from Engine Company 255. He's from Staten Island, boxing for about a year, and he's married with two kids. We've got Ricky the Razor Velasquez. He's 29, 215 pounds. He's 0-2 from Ladder Company 2. And he's an 8-year Navy veteran and a rookie firefighter. And lives in Bayside, New York, wherever that is. Then we have John the Jackhammer Phillips from Ladder Company 2 also. He's 29 years old, 225 pounds, 2-0. And he's a 7-year veteran of the FDNY. Won both of his bouts with the NYPD. And he enjoys fine Scotch whiskey, according to Bobby McGuire. Thanks, Bobby. That's interesting. Anyway, we have Todd Zilla Belton, the last guy that they have listed here. He's 32 years old, 160 pounds. He's 4-4 from Ladder Company 7. He's a 6-year veteran. And the first and only FDNY boxer with Dutch and Puerto Rican roots. His father was also a member of the FDNY. And that's it for the FDNY guys. We also have some New England law enforcement guys to mention. We have Tom Bolo, who's a 175-pounder, light heavyweight master division. Tim Kays, I know he's a Quincy cop. He's 195 pounds, it's Quincy, Massachusetts officer, 195 pounds, novice at light heavyweight. Actually, that's usually cruiserweight, but they're going light heavy here. Matt Guerin versus, he's fighting Velasquez. He's at heavyweight. I'm not sure if he's a corrections officer or police officer. I know Bob Sweeney. We have him on the show. He's heavyweight, Masters Division, and he's the guy with the black eye, the poster. We got Dan Davis fighting at middleweight. Dan Meldino also fighting at middleweight for the officer side, police. Mark Gogan, we were going to have him on last week, but I forgot to call him. He's light heavyweight at 199 pounds. Mike Browning, light heavyweight. William Collins, this guy from Mickey Ward's gym, is fighting, probably looks like he's going to be fighting Dreher, the guy that I was supposed to fight. They got this William Collins lined up to fight him. So, unless they decide against it, if they decide against him, then that's the one I'm going to step in the fight. Mickey Ward's gym, another guy, Justin Robertson, is going to be fighting. Another guy from the law enforcement circles, I guess, at 201 pounds. And then we have the main event. Another guest we have on, Adam Quick, who's the 2004 New England Golden Gloves champion at 175 pounds, fighting Billy Traft, who was the 2005 and 2006 New England Golden Gloves champion. This is a rematch between the two. And we have these guys, we had Adam on the show. And this should be pretty decent. This is like 12 fights here they're supposed to have. And we have the tribute. We're going to have some silent auction items. And we're going to have all kinds of food, wine, some good rum, I'm hearing. And then Harpoon. Harpoon's going to be on tap there. So it's definitely going to be a great night. We'll remind everybody a little bit about the particulars before we end the show tonight. But we do have a heck of a lot of boxing news to get to and MMA news. Did you see the riot, Tony? Did you hear about that?
Oh, the woman back on deck. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Oh, no, not that one. I'm talking about the one that just happened this weekend in MMA. That's the one you're talking about.
Oh, no, I didn't hear about that.
Well, you know how MMA is all proud that they're on free TV again. They got this contract going with Strikeforce and CBS. So this past weekend, they had a big fight between Dan Henderson, the guy that just got released from the UFC or left the UFC to go to Strikeforce, and he's fighting this guy that's always been with Strikeforce, Jake Shields, or Elite XC. He's been with that part of the company. But anyway, Jake Shields went all five rounds with him and tuned him up pretty good. And then after the fight, the main event of the night, they're going to interview Jake Shields on national TV, and one of his old opponents comes up to him, and he's asking for his rematch. And all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose inside the cage. It's like, one of them old-fashioned boxing brawls inside the ring. Sucker punches and all. And the actual announcer is like, gentlemen, we're on national TV. Gentlemen. And I only saw the clip of it. I didn't watch it live. But, I did watch the fight after the fact. I wasn't very impressed. It was kind of a boring fight. But, it's not good for MMA to have that kind of a scene unfold on free TV when you're trying to make a good impression. But I don't think anybody was very badly hurt or anything, and there were some good fights on the card. But it's just not a good scene for MMA. It's not what you want to be out in the public eye. But we also had some very big boxing news. Just yesterday I heard this horrible boxing news about this Edwin Valero. 28-0, I think it was his record.
It was either 27-0 or 28-0, all by knockout. I mean, he had the world in his hand. And news broke a few weeks ago that he was really having some trouble. Either like he was stalking his wife or he was physically abusing her or something. And he had gotten thrown in a psychiatric ward, and they were saying news is breaking that he was having drug and alcohol problems. I didn't hear anything until this past weekend when Edwin Valera was arrested for the murder of his wife. I said, whoa. I'm like, did I just read this?
Right.
And apparently, he was down, they were in the hotel room. He walked in the lobby and he's like, I stabbed my wife and murdered her. So they arrested him, they brought him into jail, and I mean, obviously, I mean, if you told me, if anybody was guilty, it was him. And then he hung himself in the jail cell. Like I said, I don't believe Arturo Gatti committed suicide. I do believe Edwin Valera committed suicide. And that's really a tragic loss because, I mean, he had all the talent in the world. He was an exciting fighter who was really on the rise. But, I mean, his personal demons got the better of him, and that's sad.
Yeah, you know, like just when you think you got trouble.
Yeah, right.
That comes along, you know. Just when you think you got everything in the world, you know, something happens, and it's like the domestic disputes sometimes are the worst of all. Because, you know, something happens to people when things go wrong in a relationship. They become different people, you know, they get so used to things the way they are, and then something changes, and it's like, you know, they can't accept their world changing that much, you know.
Right, right.
They've had things going like that with that person for so long, and once something changes, it just, like, sets people loose. I mean, you have these people that are just, you know, the next door neighbor is always saying, oh, he was a great guy, you know, no problem.
Right, exactly.
And it's not to handle, so, I mean, Edwin, it was just the ultimate promise, you know.
And
more questions about Gatti. I mean, they did cite Gatti in the report that, you know, him and the other guy that supposedly shot himself in the chest, there was some kind of...
Alexis Arguello.
Yeah, Arguello. They just mentioned him in the same article. And
Just make it
and say, well, you know, what is it with boxers, too? It's not just domestic violence, but what is it with...
Yeah, it's not just boxers, though. I mean, come on. I mean, you get suicides in all walks of life. I mean, you have lawyers... I've heard of doctors, I've heard of football players, I've heard of people ODing, so...
The boxing either, you know, we talked about this before, I know for a fact, with the wrestler guy there, Benoit, and it's the head injury, the type of thing, that I don't know whether this guy would have even been under that same category because he had so many knockouts. I mean, obviously, go... distance and get hit that much, but you also got to consider sparring and the whole deal. You know, how much did that brain damage affect that area of the brain that makes you do crazy stuff?
Okay, Rich, I want to take a time out for just 1 second because the Eagles have just traded up from pick 24 to pick 13. What are they going to do? I say they're going to go with Earl Thomas, safety. I could have been at the fucking draft party tonight if they would have had it on Saturday like they always did. It's a stupid draft that it'd be on Thursday, like the assholes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm a little bitter here.
That's all right.
You know I'm an ornery. Oh, yeah, thanks. You got a commercial. Let me mute it again.
Watch the Red Sox.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got a lot more to talk about. I'm not even on BoxRec yet. I got to check out what's coming up.
Well, I just want to briefly go over the fights from last week, and like I said, very briefly.
They did catch. Yeah, go ahead, you can talk about that.
Well, I want to start off with the Friday night fight. My good friend Hammer and Hank Lundy, very effective 10-round decision. Double knockdown, yeah. But Lundy was more off balance. I mean, he kind of fell forward, and kind of, I think, tripped over the guy. He obviously wasn't hurt. The other guy was. The only problem with Hank is Hank actually buckled the guy with the first punch of the fight. He buckled him with a jab, and then he knocked him down twice, okay, including the double knockdown in the first round. Then I saw Hank get away from his game plan a little bit. He got very aggressive, a little too aggressive, and I was like, no, Hank, come on. Get out of that shit, you know, get back to what you were doing. And then around the fifth, sixth round, he started settling back down and really tattooing the guy to the body. The guy was a lot taller. And he did some good work in there. He put him down again, I think, around the sixth or seventh round. I think it was the sixth. Won a decision. So that was a very effective performance. So, yeah, you got to give up to Hammer and Hank on that. Then we had the fights on Saturday night. Which
general impression I got from Hank's fight was that he was like a man possessed in there.
He was. Right. You could tell Hank had his game face on.
Hank's opponent would be already dead.
Yeah, exactly. Hank had his game face on. He was ready to go. Then the fights on Saturday night, the first fight, Lee Shimpute absolutely demolished Edison Miranda, who is, he hasn't got it no more. It was one uppercut in the third round, and Miranda was down and out. And then Kelly Pavlik got upset. It was kind of shocking. Let me unmute it because the Eagles must have picked. Okay, Kelly got upset. what's-his-face, Martinez, Sergio Martinez, just good movement early, okay? And he stole, I would say, three of the first four rounds. Not all four like Howard Letterman had it, but then Pavlik got back into it. He got back into it, and he is actually doing some good work in there, knocking down, but that cut over Pavlik's right eye, he couldn't see, and the cornerman did a horrible job. And that's what cost him the fight, was that cut. Martinez got energized over the last three rounds, and he really, you know, took it to him.
Well,
so,
that's interesting. We do have some fights coming up here. I just sort of noticed this. I thought Adamek was going up to heavyweight.
Yeah, this weekend he's fighting, what's his name, Chris Areola.
No, he isn't. He's fighting at light heavyweight against Nadjib Mohammadi for the vacant EBU light heavyweight title, according
yeah.
to track.
Well, I think that's a bad fight for Adamek against Areola, because Adamek's easy to hit. Steve Cunningham's a great fighter, but not much of a puncher, and he was hitting Adamek with some bombs. Areola hits one of them with all 245 to 270 pounds, whatever he comes in at. He has a chance to really knock Adamek for a loop. Adamek, I think, overall is a better fighter, but Areola might just be too big and too physical. Just a lot of it depends on what Areola has left, too.
Is that fight really going on this weekend?
That fight's supposed to be on HBO this weekend.
Shit. There's a Thomas Adamek at light heavyweight fighting in France. Different Thomas Adamek. This guy's
got to be different. Okay, time out. Eagle selection. Hold on. They're already getting booed.
Maybe they did that on purpose. They're like, all right, your name's Adamek. His name's Adamek. He's fighting this weekend. You're going to fight this weekend.
What? Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me! God, they suck!
Who they pick? Nobody good.
What a fucking waste! I hate them, you know? I hear Eagles suck chants.
We have the Super 6 tournament this Saturday. We also got to talk about. It's going to be on Showtime. We have Carl Froch going up against Mikel Kessler.
That's a good fight. I mean, now that you're talking about Froch's
title,
I heard a rumor of Joe Calzaghe coming out of retirement to fight him. Froch's got a few more fights in the Super 6 tournament, and I'm not most impressed guy with Carl Froch. I mean, he's a tough guy. He's undefeated. Granted that. But if Jermaine Taylor had a little bit more killer instinct, Taylor would have beat him in the fight. Taylor had Froch down, he had him hurt, he pretty much had him out. So, I'm not totally, Carl Froch is very mechanical, and, I don't have to describe him. He's very mechanical, very stiff, he's very awkward, got a decent chin, but I've seen him down and I've seen him hurt. I think, a lot of it depends on what Kessler has left, too, but I think Kessler wins this fight.
Yeah, it's could be. Could definitely be. Definitely gonna be one worth watching if you can get Showtime. We also have some stuff going on in Germany. A couple fights worth mentioning. Jürgen Brahmer at light heavyweight, who's 35-2 with 28 knockouts, fighting Mariano Nicholas Plotinski, 16-3, but the big fight is the female fight over there. We have somebody who's going to go at flyweight, 10-rounder between Susie Kentikian, who's 26-0, 16 knockouts. She's fighting Nadia Rowey, 11-0, with 3 knockouts, and this is for the WIBF, Women's International Boxing Federation flyweight title, the WBA female flyweight title, and the WBO female flyweight title. So all the gold is on the line there for those belts. And we have the mismatch of the week, too. I can't decide whether it comes from Latvia or Italy. So I'm going to get told. These These are main events. Keep in mind, main events of the mismatches of the week. We have super middleweight Christian Sanavia in Italy fighting at a record 40-5 with 12 knockouts and one draw, fighting a guy named Sandor Ramoxa, who is 8-3 with 4 knockouts. 40-5 versus 8-3. Good thing it's only 8 rounds. And then we have an 8-rounder with 2 minutes in Latvia. Oh, there's a female fight, that's why. It's a real mismatch. We have 11-0 Sofia Sidorova with 9 of her 11 wins coming by knockout. Fighting Aineta Laiknina, who is 1-1. One knockout. Her one win was by knockout. Her one loss was by knockout. So 11-0 versus 1-1 for the vacant Latvia female featherweight title. Mexico's trying to get in on the mismatches, too. We have Joel Juarez, 23-8 with 22 knockouts, fighting Juan Carlos Marquez, who's 5-5 this weekend. Not a mismatch, but a pretty interesting fight down in Mexico. We have super flyweight Jorge Arce fighting. He's 53-6 with 1 draw, 40 knockouts, 1 knockout wins. He's fighting Cecilio Santos, who's 24-13. Draws. Sort of not really a mismatch, but a tune-up fight anyway. Whoa, I definitely spoke too soon. 12-round heavyweight fight coming from Mexico. Saul Montana, 49-15, 43 knockouts, fighting Alejandro No Hope in the World De La Torre, who's 1-3. For the Mexico heavyweight title. I know you got your money on De La Torre.
Of course.
That's got to be like 1,000,000-1 odds. 49-50. That's going to be mismatch of the week history. 43 knockouts and 49 wins. I never heard of Saul Montana. Have you ever heard of Saul Montana?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, from way back in the day. I mean, shit. You know I'm betting on him. My question is, this fight's on pay-per-view.
Last guy he fought was his pro debut. No.
What is the combined age in this fight?
Last guy he lost to was David Tua. What, for the light heavy, for the Mexico heavyweight title?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Alejandro is only 1-3, so he's probably not that old.
Well, I'll think of another fight. Hold on. I was getting confused. Yeah, Eagles screw up a pick, I get ornery.
Right. All right, well, we got some other serious fights somewhere here, I'm sure, to talk about.
Well, we were talking about the Adamek fight. I think that's a very serious fight. And here was the fight that I was thinking about talking about. I actually was thinking about it in the card today. Oh, wait, maybe it's off now. I read somewhere that your boy, not my boy, your boy, Hector Camacho, all 27 years old of him, was fighting on pay-per-view. And I forget the guy he was fighting, but like I said, it wouldn't be somebody you'd see on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Right.
And it was on pay-per-view. I was like, why?
Oh, could it be this, the HBO card, Thomas Adamek with a C. Not to be confused with the Thomas Adamek with no Z that I was just talking about. He's going to be the co-main event. There's two title fights on this card. He's fighting Chris, like you said. Adamek is 40-1 with 27 knockouts. Ariel is 28-1 with 25 knockouts. And Adamek's new to the heavyweight division, so we'll see what happens. That's for the IBF International Heavyweight title. So, he's not going pretty fast there. Adamek is already looking for a heavyweight title. So we also have a light middleweight fight, 12-rounder, between Alfredo Angulo, 17-1 with 14 knockouts, and Joel Julio, 35-3 with 31 knockouts.
Yeah, that'll be a good puncher fight. Angulo had a big knockout last year over Harry Joe Yorgi. And Joao Julio is a good puncher. The one mistake I think Yorgi made was, he was backing up too much, and he wasn't getting Angulo's respect. And Angulo was coming straight in. Then when they went to trade, and they went to, slug off a little bit, he had the momentum. Yorgi was on the field. Joao Julio is a guy that he's going to come to fight. He's a tough guy. He's got good power. He has been knocked out one time, and that was two fights ago by James Kirkland, who had a fantastic potential in front of him, and then he got himself in a lot of trouble, and he's in jail now.
Uh-oh. Yeah, well, that's, I'm going to look up Hector. I'm going to see what Camacho's up to. We'll see if that's really the real deal. Since you got so much going on with your Phillies draft. You know what the Patriots are doing? I bet you know. You should know because you got half your players from them last year.
What?
Yeah, you got a lot of good Patriots last year, didn't you?
Kiss on the Patriots.
Do you still got all the guys you guys picked off from us?
What are you talking about?
We gave you like three defensive guys last year. Didn't we make some deals with you guys, Patriots?
Yeah, we got what's his face from you? The guy you hated because he gave up the touchdown in the Super Bowl. Then he hurt his neck.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, him. And we got Asako Samuel the year before.
Here for Hector Camacho coming up. Boxford was missing in action. Last seen fighting Luis Ramon Campos to a draw in May of 2009. Hector Camacho Jr.
Congratulations. You've been selected to receive a $1,000 Walmart gift card.
It's fighting May 7th versus Denny Dalton. And he just fought, what? He fought Luis Ramon Campos, too? Junior and senior fought the same guy? The same year?
Probably. Around the same weight.
In the same year? Has that ever been done before? I doubt it.
The same year?
That's got to be a first.
Well, I know both of the Chavez's, junior and senior, fought a guy named Grover or something. Grover Wiley?
Yeah. That's amazing. Junior and senior were the last two people to fight Campos.
There was one other...
Other fought him to a draw. Beat him. In October.
And,
last year.
And this is more going back, and not because of the father and son, but more or less because the guy they fought was around for forever. Archie Moore fought the Johnson. I think it was Harold Johnson, maybe? Oh, shit, I can't remember. A couple Johnsons that were fighters. I think Archie Moore fought them both.
Anyway, that about wraps it up for the big boxing upcoming events for this weekend. Just checking out the MMA lineup here for a second. See what we got there. Let's see. Tomorrow night we have Battle Brawl. It's West Beach, Saipan. If you're over there on that side of the country, Trench Wars 12, Battle Brawl. Bellator Fighting Championships are on tonight in Uncasville, Connecticut, at the Mohegan Sun, not too far from where I am, a couple hours from. We got the Night of Reckoning 3 Empire Fighting Championships going on Friday at Harrah's Casino in Tunica, Mississippi. McDonald versus Horwich going on at the River Cree Resort Casino in Edmonton, Alberta. LGIO MMA 1, that's also tomorrow night. Battle of the Champions, Red and Jerry's, Sheridan, Colorado. That's run by RMBB, whatever that stands for, also tomorrow night. Then we got Saturday in Tokyo, Japan. We have Gig Tokyo 4, put on by the Shuto folks over there. We have Mayhem in Minneapolis, put on by CFX, going on at the Target Center in Minneapolis. We have World Extreme Cage Fighting 48, Jose Aldo versus Uriah Faber, big event going on at the Arco Arena in Sacramento, California. And I really don't know why they're making this fight. Just doesn't seem to me to be something that's going to be very competitive. We know that Jose Aldo beat Mike Brown. We know Mike Brown beat Uriah Faber, I think it was twice.
That second fight, Faber had broken his hand. He fought three rounds with one hand. It was damn close. And you got to understand something, Rick, and I always say this, and I don't know MMA as much as I know boxing, but styles make fights. There's a good chance Aldo will be favored, but you never know. And I always go back to the one thing was, Mosley beat De La Hoya twice. I'm going boxing again because I know it. Mosley beat De La Hoya twice, and then Forrest beat Mosley twice. Then Mayorga came out and he beat Forrest twice. Then De La Hoya knocked out Vargas, or Mayorga, I'm sorry. So styles make fights. There's a chance Faber might, take Aldo out.
Well, we'll just have to find out. That's a pretty interesting card. We also actually, of course, we're going to have Mike Brown in action again on that card. Why not? The number two featherweight behind Jose. Uriah's the number three. And Mike's going to be fighting Manny Gamburian, who, if you watched The Ultimate Fighter for enough seasons, you might remember from one of those seasons. Now he's fighting for WBC under the same UFC umbrella. We also have Benson Henderson versus Donald Cerrone for the WBC Lightweight Championship. So we got two championship belts, the featherweight and the lightweight on the line. And Uriah's really going to have to show that he's on the comeback trail and he's newly possessed. He hasn't had any easy fights in the last few weeks. We also have Scott Jorgensen versus Antonio Banuelos. This should be a pretty decent fight. Anthony Nguani versus Shane Roller. And Takeya Mizugaki versus Ronnie Aya. Also on the card, Leonard Garcia is fighting Chan Sung Yung. And a few other guys fighting on that card. It should be interesting. We have some MMA fighting in my neck of the woods. I think we have this weekend. The American Fighting Organization is fighting Saturday at Plymouth Memorial Hall. Night of Champions they're having. Coincidentally, Cage FX, the folks that we've been working with here at Fighting Unlimited for a while, they're also going to have their next event at Memorial Hall. I've heard because the town of Plymouth, where Plymouth Rock is and all that, because the town of Plymouth owns Memorial Hall, they up the capacity there for these events, but they won't up the capacity at the other places where they want to have these events. So they're playing a little Monopoly game there. You got to go to us if you're going to have an event in our town. This is kind of funny. A little sideline story on MMA in Massachusetts. But I think it's going to be May 28th. KFX event, so mark that date on your calendar. That's when they're going to have that event that we were trying to plug before with the heavyweight main event between Lee Bean versus Christian Moorcraft. So keep an eye out for that. But anyway, we have plenty of other MMA fights here. Respect Fighting Championships 3 going on in Essen, Germany on Saturday. We got Courage Fighting Championships 21 in Decatur, Illinois. We also have Desert Rage Full Contact Fighting, Desert Rage 7, to Arizona. Shuto, Finland. Tampere Fight Night 2 in Karkama, Finland. We got fighting going on in Fargo, North Dakota. Crowbar MMA Spring Brawls going on Saturday. Of course, we always have our Sunday events in Japan. We got Yoshida's Farewell in Tokyo, Japan. Sounds like a video game, doesn't it? Yoshida's Farewell. Samurai Fight Combat 3 going on in Curitiba, Paraná, Brazil on Sunday. Passion Tour 4 from Tokyo. That's Pancrase fighting. And then finally, we got some things going on next week. The Bellator Fighting Championship 16 going on the 29th, and Passion Tour 4 going on the 29th in Tokyo. That's it for the MMA, boxing schedules, and all we got left is bullshit time. Your favorite part of the show, Tony?
I'm good at that.
I did forget to mention another guy that stepped up big time for the Battle of the Badges thing, so might as well talk a little bit more about them, that whole thing, while we get time. Prime Athletics, if you check them out, Prime Athletics is a big sponsor of this event. And they're actually, I saw the award last night. They're coming up with this Fight of the Night award, and it's a nice... basically like a, it's like a trophy, but it's all made in metal. It's like instead of a metal you wear around your neck, it's like a big emblem. It's all made in nice boxing, like a picture of a boxing ring with two guys fighting, and your gloves are like bronzed, and the rest of it's all silver. So it looks really nice. Point two for the rest of their life, saying, yeah, I won that on April 24th, 2010. And it looked really good. But other than that, we have, of course, the Be Positive guy, the Any Sports TV. Watch the pay-per-view there, anysportstv.com, if you want to watch the pay-per-view. We're going to have an update on the Battle of the Badges .info site tonight. I'm going to plug the event with the... I'm going to put into the Battle of the Badges site the actual player so you can watch the event right there and order the event right there on our site. Also, we're going to put the fight card on there for anybody who wants to see the full fight card. Obviously, you know, all fight cards are subject to change, as we know, and my name might end up in there. Looking like a no-go at this point, I have to say, but I don't know, it's fun to just even think about it. You know, I'm excited whether it happens or not. I know I'm going to have a good time at this event, so. And I know one thing, whether I fight or not, it's going to get me wanting to fight again. It's going to get me into the fighting spirit, so. It's already the fighting spirit. I mean, for Christ's sake, I did more working out this week than I have in the last, like, 4 months. And I don't know if I'm going to fight or not. So I'm definitely thinking about it again and back in the mood. We got a lot of Norwich connection to this event, so it's going to be kind of like a reunion for Norwich. 10 years out of my graduation there, almost. Next year is going to be, well, this year is the 10-year anniversary of my rookie year. They had a little setup there where you know if you go through your freshman year with that class, you know you're kind of adopted by that class. So even though I graduated in '99, the class that I went through the freshman system with was 2000. So this will be the 10th anniversary of that year graduating. So it's right about the right time for me to start reconnecting with these Norwich folks because we're gonna have probably a bigger party up there. when we get to that, when it comes homecoming time in September or October, whenever they do that, and we have the actual reunion class events and stuff up there. But, you know, the event is, of course, about the firemen and the service, civil service sector. Like we said, we're going to make a big hurrah for them and hopefully raise a lot of money for charity. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to have... hopefully over 500 people. I heard that we've had a couple hundred seats sold already beforehand. And we got two more days here to plug it up a little bit and put the word out on the street for the walk-in crowd. So we'll see what happens. Other than that, we covered the upcoming fight this weekend, but we have some other fights on the horizon, namely the Mayweather versus Mosley. So now's a good time to talk about that. And also, if you want to call in, we do have a call-in number now. We are live again, so I don't want to forget that. If you want to call us, you're listening out there, you can call 347-324-3228. And we have the show until 10. We might end early, but if anybody wants to call and chat with us, call in. We got some time here. We're going to talk probably at least in a few minutes here. So now's the time. We do need our first caller. So the number again, 347-324-3228. It's a lot of threes, but I know you can handle it. One more time, 347-324-3228, if you want to talk to us. But what do you think, Tony? I mean, I know we talked about this briefly before, but you haven't made your pick yet on who's going to be the winner of that, right? Mosley.
Well, actually, should I say it live on the air, or should I wait till the report comes out?
I'm sure it won't spoil the whole report. People will still want to read your full in-depth report. Reasonings for why. So I don't think
people like my report. My reports are popular.
I know. I'm not saying they're not. I'm saying that.
I know. I'm not messing with you. Because a couple people have actually emailed me. They like the way I break things down and all that. Well, here's what I'm seeing, Rich. I'm putting everything into the computer here, and I was talking to a colleague at work today. He had come in to pick up some materials. And he was just finding out last week that I was a fighter, and all that. And he was like, "Oh man," he's like asking me all these stories. And today he called me up. He's like, "What weight class did you fight in?" I told him I'm like only guy in college boxing, five weight classes in one semester. And he's like, "How the hell did you do that?" So he started bullshitting. Well, he stops in to pick up some materials. He goes, "I gotta ask you, Mayweather Mosley." I said, "Well," I said, "James," I said, "I haven't put the info into the computer yet, but I said, I'm getting preliminary readings." And what my preliminary readings are telling me right now, Rich, is we're looking at a close fight. Mayweather is just, he's got just two things that I think are going to help him win the fight. It's not going to, no way it's going to be a knockout, number one. The thing that I got to give Mayweather the advantages on is just, he's a little bit younger, and he's just a shade faster. Mosley's fast. Mayweather is just exceptionally fast, and it's a different kind of fast. Now, for Mosley to win this fight, and what gives him a good chance is the fact that he's being trained by Nazim.
Whoa. Well, I know you have the computer and all that. This isn't the final thing, but how do you determine that Mosley is not faster than Mayweather? I would think that Mosley has always been the fast specialist. Like, he's always been the guy that wanted to perfect the speed and be as fast as possible, and that's where, he's only recently got the power. So I kind of want to explain how Mayweather is faster than that.
Mosley always had power. Mosley had power. You figure the guy started off his career at, 20-something and over 20 knockouts. I've gone to Shane Mosley fights when he fought in Philadelphia one time defending the lightweight title. He knocked the guy out cold. Shane Mosley's always had power. And Shane Mosley's always had speed. He has a style of what they call power boxing, where he uses his speed, but he doesn't do those shoeshine punches that have no power on them. He throws fast punches, but they're all fast punches that mean something.
He's not a Taylor type of fast puncher.
Well, he's not as fast as Meldrick was. Meldrick was exceptionally fast, but Meldrick wasn't as much of a power. Meldrick would throw five, six, seven punches at a time, but they were punches that were like gnat stings, when Shane was more like and I'm not even gonna say a wasp. I'm gonna say more like, you know, he'd give you a good smack, bang, bang, bang. You know, they were quick, but they weren't like flurry fast. Like they weren't them like quick little uppercuts that look all pretty and everything. When Shane throws his punches, they all mean something. Now the thing is, watch him on video. Pull up a Mosley video, pull up a Mayweather video, and just watch. And it's different styles with their speed too. Mayweather is more of reflex fast, you know. And you really have to see it to understand it. Mayweather is more reflex fast. So the thing, he's a little bit younger than Mosley, and he's a little bit better defensively. I'm taking nothing away from Shane Mosley, and believe me, I think he has a very good chance to win this fight. But the computer is saying that it's likely going to be Mayweather by a close decision. Mosley's best chance of success would be patterning his game plan after what De La Hoya did, and that would be using his jab into the chest and the shoulders, and backing Mayweather up, back into the ropes, making him go on his heels, making him uncomfortable. You make a guy like Mayweather uncomfortable and you dictate the pace on him and don't let him control the flow of the fight, you can give him some problems. Another thing you got to do to a guy like Floyd Mayweather is, like I said earlier with Muhammad Ali, he was so fast, you can't try to counter his punches. You need to punch when he punches. So what I mean by that is when he's throwing a punch, you got to be right there and ready to throw almost at the same time. And the way to do that is you got to make him go first. Mayweather is a guy that he likes to use his defensive skills and his speed to be the counterpuncher. He wants you to come forward, throw the punches, and then he blocks them off, and then he counters you. You can't let that happen. What you got to do is maybe use fakes. You come in there, fake the jab, get Mayweather to punch first. That's going to be a tough task. If anybody can do it, it's possibly Shane Mosley. So I'm still, the report's going to come out this weekend. I'm going to write it on Sunday. That's the way I'm leaning.
All right, well, you know I always have to play the devil's advocate.
Oh, you always do. I mean, that's your job.
I know for a fact that looking at Mosley's last fight, he's a different guy than I thought he was. Because I was bad-mouthing him for a long time. Whenever you bring him up or anybody would say that, you know, he's one of the top welterweights, I would always be like, but, you know, what's he done lately? You know, and then all of a sudden he goes and fights Margarito, beats him to a pulp. You know, and we talked to Keisha, who'd seen him work out, and, you know, she talked about how he has newfound power. And, you know, that fight really was a breakout fight for him, I think, that really showed that he was back. But you also need that follow-up fight to show that it was for real. And I think that he knows that. You know, he knows that everybody thinks probably that Margarito fight was just a flash in the pan. Maybe Margarito was a little bit too distracted by the rap issue and didn't fight his best fight. So I think Mosley's coming into this thing with so much to prove. You know, Mayweather is not going to get the Pacquiao fight if he wins. Mosley's going to get the Pacquiao fight if he wins.
Sure.
And it's going to happen right away. So, I mean, best of both worlds, for Mosley to win, it's the best picture for boxing, I think. So I really am rooting for Mosley. My brain, like yours, says that Mayweather's probably going to win. He's undefeated. I hate to go against an undefeated guy. He's a defensive fighter. And I'm going to say, either way, I like Mosley. I want him to win. But either way, I think it's going to be, if Mayweather wins, it's a unanimous decision. I don't think it's going to be a close decision.
It's good because you know he's not going to knock Mosley out. Mosley has a chance to stop a Mayweather. He's got to, you know, force him on his heels, get to his body, and, you know, wear him down. You know, and like I said, it can happen. He's got a good trainer in Nazeem Richardson. He's a physical guy. You got to understand something with Mayweather, too. Mayweather's never fought really a complete package. Look at, like, a lot of the guys. I'm not saying he hasn't fought good fighters, but he's never fought somebody that offered so many things. Look at this. okay, Dan LaHoya was past his prime. Dan LaHoya was the closest to a complete package that he got. Someone that could box a little bit, someone that had punching power, someone that had size. Dan LaHoya was losing his speed by that time, but he still had, you know, a little bit of hand speed left. So that was the closest he came to fighting a fighter that was relatively complete. Look at some of his other fights. Diego Corrales, great fighter, good hard puncher, not good on defense, horrible chin. And that way he gave Mayweather a chance to just move inside, hit him, move out, knock him down, stop him. He had other guys like Luis Castillo, very good fighter, but he's more of like a one-dimensional pressure fighter, not really fast. And he gave Mayweather a hell of a fight the first time. You got guys like Ricky Hatton, you know, I always said I liked him, but he's very much overrated. You know, straight in, pressure fighter, easy to hit. He got tuned up by Luis Collazo and was lucky to get the decision. He knew Mayweather was going to tear him apart. Carlos Baldemir, a big, rugged, tough, slow as hell fighter. The guy that Mayweather could pick apart. Even Arturo Gatti. Gatti was very one-dimensional. A guy tailor-made for a guy like Mayweather. In Mosley, he's fighting a guy that has power, that has speed, that has a good chin, has a good body attack. He's a complete package.
And I've been saying for a long time, the fight that I really want to see is Pacquiao versus Mosley. But the big mystery is whether he's going to be that same guy that he was against Margarito. I mean, he's had a lot of time off. And that's good for a lot of guys, but it's bad for other guys. So that's
very true.
I think, like, I think I mentioned this in the last fight where I was saying that, you know, I'm watching Floyd and I'm thinking, why doesn't anybody punch him in the shoulder?
How often do I see that, Rich?
Not be able to do that shoulder roll. Because I think Shane would be smart enough to figure that out. Because the one thing that I've been reading about Shane is that it's like, you know, not that Floyd isn't doing this, but it's like, to Shane, it's like he's in boxing. He's in like the military of boxing right now. You know, like he's in the boxing army. He's living at the gym, literally. You know, living, eating, breathing boxing during this training camp. And you know, I think he really wants this.
I think Shane's been revived by getting a guy like Nardine training him. So Shane was getting a little bit stale. He really struggled against Margarito before he knocked him out, and he needed a change of scenery, and that's what he's got now. You know, of course, I'm rooting for Shane big time. And it's a different thing. You fight a guy like Margarito, who, okay, maybe he wasn't, well, you know, he was distracted by the whole hand wrap thing. Maybe in other fights it wasn't as much of an advantage. But, like, when Hopkins fought Trinidad, and they had the hand wrap issue in the Trinidad fight, it didn't make any matter if Trinidad had horseshoes in those gloves because he couldn't land a punch. Same thing when Margarito fought Mosley. Margarito could have had, you know, cast iron brass knuckles in those gloves. It wouldn't have mattered because he wasn't hitting Mosley at all. And Mosley used that speed, used that power, used everything against Margarito, and boom, slapped the little piss out of him.
Well, either way the fight goes, I think it's going to be very entertaining. And I think that... Whoa. Do we have a caller?
Do we have a caller?
I'm echoing all of a sudden.
Oh.
Well, I guess we don't like the show on the system. Anyway, what I was going to say is, you know, Mayweather and Mosley, I think it's going to be a very entertaining fight. And I think even if Mosley loses by decision, he's going to come close to knocking Floyd out, probably the closest anybody ever has, because he's going to be trying, and he knows that's going to be his strength, that's going to be his chance, is to knock him out. And so we're going to see probably Floyd get in the most trouble he's ever gotten in a fight, I believe. And that's where the best moments of the fight are going to be, win or lose, you know. But I think Mosley's got a great chance to win. And I would say by the eighth round, if he's not, if he hasn't knocked him down at least once, then he's going to lose by decision. But I think he'll knock him out eighth or ninth round if he doesn't knock him out.
You're picking Mosley by stoppage.
Not necessarily picking him, but I'm saying if he knocks
him out. Oh, you're saying if he wins, it'll be in that eighth, ninth round. I think I got you.
I guess I am picking. I'm going to say
alright. Alright, I like it.
You twisted my arm.
I hope you're right.
Eighth or ninth round. Knockout. TKO. We'll say TKO. Let me see. And then I like Floyd to retire. One loss. No. He'll stay in it, I think, and he'll have to scramble himself. Like he'll have to beg almost to get his next money fight, which would be funny for a guy like him. But I want to see Mosley versus Pacquiao. And I like Pacquiao in that one. Like I would in any fight, but I think that might be a little bit more evenly matched than Mayweather versus Mosley. But the thing about the Mayweather versus Mosley fight that makes it interesting is, you know, these guys are both from America, number one. You know, both been big American boxing names for a long time, and they're classic welterweights. So, it's a different story than a guy like Pacquiao who's been moving up from the lighter rankings and just a total pound-for-pound type of package fighter, not necessarily a guy who's known as a welterweight as much. So this is really, you know, the old-school classic welterweights here going against each other. They've been around a long time in America, so it's kind of like the American face of the world championship here going on. And then whoever wins got to fight Pacquiao. But I don't think the whole lawsuit situation is straightened out with the defamation and Golden Boy and Manny's camp having that big fight over that issue. And so if Floyd wins, well, who does he fight? You know, is he gonna go fight Berto now? Make that fight happen? Who wants to really see that? I mean, nobody's crying out for it, but maybe it's a good fight. I don't know. But I just think it's just much better for boxing if Mosley wins. But you know, as we know, we can't predict the future. We can guess. That's all we can do. I'd love to see Mosley win, though.
Well, Rich, I just would like to say good luck to the New Jersey Devils. Golf season starts tomorrow, guys.
Philly team just beat him out, or what?
Yeah, Flyers just shut him out, beat him 4-1.
Wow.
So, and they were the second. They were the second seeded team.
What's going on with the next Celtics game? I don't know. When's that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't follow basketball too much, especially because the Sixers suck.
I mean, it's like I don't know how they organize this sports world, but I mean, I don't know. It's like every year they always got to have the one part of the year where all these playoffs just get jammed together.
I know, it's weird, ain't it?
You got baseball starting. You know, you got to watch the baseball team, and then you got to keep track of the NBA and the freaking NHL playoffs. What were they thinking?
here's a question for you.
Time. I don't know. I don't know why they couldn't figure it out. They should have it at different times.
Rich, I want to see how good you are, okay? What are the only 2 days out of the year that none of the four major sports teams play?
None of the major sports teams?
None of the four major sports.
None at all.
Right. That's football, basketball, or I say football, I mean NFL, NHL, NBA, and Major League Baseball. There's only 2 days out of the year that none of those four sports are played. Can you name them?
I don't know. I'd have to say July 4th, maybe?
July 4th is not one of them, because I remember watching a Phillies game during the 4th of July Day parade, and they blew the save in the ninth inning, and I was pissed off. Then I went and drank a lot at the party. So July 4th is not one.
I don't know. That's a good question. This is like a Trivial Pursuit question. Columbus Day? Not one of them.
Columbus Day is not one of them.
Memorial Day?
Not Memorial Day. I've watched many of Philly's games on Memorial Day. And Labor Day.
Labor Day is not one of them, obviously. Well, you know, Christmas isn't one of them.
this isn't one of them because the Eagles beat the Cowboys on Christmas Day a couple years ago. It was a great Christmas gift.
New Year's Day?
New Year's Day. Did the Flyers play the Bruins on New Year's Day this year?
No, it wasn't New Year's Day, but it was that weekend.
Yeah, maybe we had the NHL Winter Classics on New Year's Day.
Awesome.
The Flyers played the Bruins this year.
You gotta tell me.
Yeah, you give up, right?
Give up, yeah.
The day before and the day after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Because you figure that's in what, mid-July. I think it's like July. I think the All-Star Game's like on the 13th this year, July 13th.
Yeah.
But you figure hockey and basketball are done by the time July 11th rolls around, and football hasn't started yet. Well, there's no baseball game because there's somebody to do the home run derby, and then there's no day after the All-Star Game because all the teams are. The players are going back to their teams and getting ready to start the second half of the season.
And no basketball?
No, basketball is done by that time. Yeah, the NBA finals are done sometime in June. And so the NHL finals are done by mid-July, and NFL hasn't started yet.
Uh-huh. Well.
So now you can ask people that and you know the answer.
But you made it sound like it was a holiday, so I kept guessing a holiday.
No, I didn't say it was a holiday. I said there's only 2 days out of the year.
I didn't say
it was a holiday.
No, it made it sound like it was a holiday.
Oh.
Question. But that's a good one. Now, since we're an R-rated show, and since we do have something coming up that's cop-themed, I think it's time for a joke, since we have some extra time.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to tell my favorite cop joke. And it's a story joke, so since we have 20 minutes here, I'm only going to take two of them to tell this story. But it's a good joke, story joke. I might have told you this before, maybe when you came up for the Red Sox game. I don't know. I like to tell this joke a lot, so you probably heard it before. If you haven't, you'll use it. But here it goes. All right. It's right around Christmas time, and we have this little kid riding his bicycle up the street. Little kids do. Just got it for Christmas. Now we have a mounted police officer. Kid drives up to the park, sees this mounted police officer riding around. Sees the kid and he stops him. He says, "Stop right there." And the kid stops. The cop says, "Did Santa Claus get you that bike for Christmas?" And the kid says, "Yeah. Matter of fact, he did give me this bike for Christmas." So cop says, "Oh, really? Well, next year, tell Santa Claus to put the reflector on the front of the bike instead of on the back of the bike." And he writes the kid a ticket, and he hands him the ticket. And the kid looks up at the cop and gets off his bike, throws his bike down, looks up at the cop, and he asks the cop, "Did Santa get you that horse for Christmas?" And the cop says, "Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, Santa did give me this horse for Christmas." The kid says, "Well, next year, tell Santa to put the dick on the bottom of the horse instead of on the top."
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember that joke.
So that's a good one for Christmas time. And if you're around a lot of cops, it's always funny. Actually, a cop told me that one. My uncle was a state cop for years, so I have an excuse to tell it. But I heard it from a cop. That's always my favorite joke to tell. Other than that, we got next week's show. We're going to try to get Damon or Baron Lau from the Round 5 company. I forget which one we had on before, but there's, you know, the figurines. And, of course, I got the Matt Hughes figurine when the last time we interviewed
them. I remember that.
They sent it to me. I still got it. And, of course, he's still winning, so I have no reason to throw him out. And, you know, I wasn't too happy to get him. He wasn't my favorite fighter at the time, but he's impressed me, especially with this last fight. You know, he really dismantled the other Gracie there, Enzo. But I sort of knew that was coming anyway. We'll see. We'll see if we get something else this time. But I know that round five is coming out, or they've already come out with a bunch of new figures. And they're doing very well for themselves. They don't have much competition out there. I don't think anybody's got the kind of lineup of fighters they've got. So. Did not catch the episode last night of The Ultimate Fighter, but now that I'm thinking of it, I'm going to have to catch that. And I'm going to talk next week about both this week and last week's Ultimate Fighter show. But I've been so busy with this Battle of the Badges thing that, you know, after this weekend, we're going to have a lot more time for a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, right.
That'll be good. We do have another clothing company, a couple clothing companies. Obviously, we talked about this, the Be Positive people. But we also have Discipline, D-I-S-S-I-P-L-I-N-E. Discipline Fight Gear. Might be working something out with us. Actually, I'm going to call the guy tomorrow at noon. Good thing I reminded myself. I have to write myself a little note. But they might be coming on board with us, so might be able to get some swag from them and see what happens. But those are the last things on the radar that I have. You got any final thoughts for the week there, Tony?
We really covered mostly everything I wanted to touch upon, like the fights last week, the Pablo fight, the Evolution Butte fight. Then we got the likes of the fights coming up this weekend. We talked about the Super 6 fight, the HBO card. And really, that's it. I mean, this week I got to start doing my work on, Sunday afternoon, evening for my my prediction for the Mayweather-Mosley fight. So I can write it all out and have it to you by then. So you have a full week to have it on the site, and I can send it to some various boxing forums for them to check out and get us any publicity we can. And, we go from there, really, and, nothing really else more on my end. Just best of luck this weekend with the Battle of the Badges.
Yeah, and, whether I fight or not, I know it's going to be a great event. Whether we get 500 people there or 2,000, it's all going to be for a good cause and how much money we make, and whether I come out of there with, extra $100 or not. I know the whole theme of the event, and, the whole package is going to be, for a lot of good causes, and it's all going to be done for the right reasons. So, it basically is what it is. It's hard to fail. even if you don't get a big crowd, it's all for a good cause. So. Looking forward to it. I know it's going to be fun, and it's going to be no anxiety beyond 7 o'clock on Saturday night. I'm going to be ready for it. That's when the event kicks off, and when I get time to do my tribute, as long as I have a couple of rum and cokes in me, and all my friends around, I'll be fine. I'm going to be a little bit nervous maybe for that, but if it comes time and I have to fight, I'll probably be less nervous for that. win or lose in that, it's going to be great. It's going to be a good night, and I'm definitely going to at least see a couple of my old Norwich friends and be able to give a nice tribute to one of my boxers, so I'm looking forward to it, and definitely looking forward to the free time that I'm going to have when it's all over. It's been a lot of work. I mean, little things here and there, spending time all day doing stuff that you don't seem to get a lot done, but, you make one connection, and they buy a ticket, and they tell somebody else, and, you make some big impact. So, done a lot of that face-to-face stuff and had a lot of meetings, and feel like this is the only event that we're completely prepared for, that we're not scrambling at the last second for everything to happen overnight, I feel like I'm 2 days ahead of the game this time, rather than in past events that I've helped out with for the Rocky Foundation and stuff. this one is a little bit more advanced and seems like we had a little bit of headway going into it. We got everything coming together at the right time. And I got a guy from the state representative from Brockton who's going to be doing a proclamation for Anthony as well as having the plaque there. So it's definitely going to be something that's second to none. It's going to be the pay-per-view, so you get to watch it after the fact. This is such a big event, Tony. I went out and I spent almost $100, actually over $100, on a fucking brand new camera. So I have no excuses. I got a new Kodak Easy Share camera. It's got the video and the pictures. So I'm pulling out all the stops. It's going to be the big time from now on. That's it. That's all we got. We got 10 minutes left. And I need that 10 minutes to be done with this thing. We're going to go. Next week, definitely going to have a guest from the MMA circles. We've had a lot of boxing guests and stuff, and overloaded the bracket with that. So you're going to have MMA mode next week, Tony.
And I'm going to work on getting some guests for us in the future. I know Simon Carr wants to come back on. I'll talk to us a little about what he's got going. And a few other guys I was hanging with the fights. A few weeks ago in Philadelphia, so
having Simon call me would be good for next week too, because that'll give me some time to start doing more business stuff for FNU. And I know the Ring Girl contest is ending soon, so if Simon wants to get on promoting himself with that, it'd be a good idea for him to call me next week, because that contest is coming down to the wire. Manifap over there and Dominique are going head to head, and it's a good thing I got the both of them getting prizes, because you know, it could be a real battle down to the wire. It could be, if I had only chosen one of those girls to win, you know, there'd be some serious controversy over who's getting that prize. It's a close battle. Like, they both get over 2,000 votes, but they're promoting the crap out of it still to the end. So thank you, girls. Thank you very much, ladies, I should say. Not girls, or else I'd be in trouble. But anyway, you can go to the any post on our blog, click on the from the main page of our blog, you click on the actual posting, the link at the top of the posting, and it'll take you to the little banner for the Ring Girl contest. Click on that, go to the Ring Girl contest, you can vote till April 31st. Is it 31 days in April or 30?
April's 30 days.
April 30th is the last day, so right to the end of the month. And that's all I got. Definitely looking forward to April 24th, this Saturday, at the Boston Athletic Club. Doors open at probably 6, but the event starts around 7. So I know that there's going to be 500 seats. If you get to ringside, you don't have to worry, but if you got general admission, get there early so you get a seat.
Yeah.
I want to be standing. You don't have to. But that's it. Until next week. Have a good night, folks.
All right. Signing out.